Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hola, waka, chakma, all across the tundra. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, coffee at KYUK. And as usual, I'm excited, extra special excited to be here today back in my favorite seat. You know, yesterday, Wayne Don from Aquariuk, who is also a Jalista board member, was promoted to Brigadier General in the Alaska National Guard. That makes him the highest-ranking Alaska Native currently serving in the Alaska National Guard and the first Alaska Native from the YK Delta to become a general in the Alaska National Guard. Joining us this morning to speak with Wayne Don is our own Greg Kim. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Grady. Thank you so much. Good morning, General Don, and congratulations on your promotion, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
General Don, I understand you're not the highest-ranking Alaska Native to ever serve in the Alaska National Guard. There have been three Alaska Natives who are adjutant generals, but you are the highest-ranking Alaska Native currently serving in the Alaska National Guard. What does this mean to you to represent this region and Alaska Natives at such a level?
Well, thanks for the question. First of all, there have been three general officers that have been from different parts of the state. Ed Pagano from the Aleutian Islands, John Schaefer from Kotzebue, and Jacob Lestenkoff from the Aleutian Islands area. And so it's a tremendous honor. I mean, there's it comes with a tremendous opportunity, and I'm pretty excited to serve in this role that I'm in now as the director of the Joint Staff, which means that I'm responsible for any kind of domestic operation within the state, specifically right now with all of our COVID preparations. That's what my primary role has been so far.
Oh, I see. And could you talk about what those COVID preparations are? How has your job changed during this pandemic?
Well, my job largely changed last February. I was made the response director for COVID, and so a lot of what we were looking at, we were taking a look at what was going on in the rest of the country as far as states and the need for guard assistance. So we took a look at patient transport. We take a look at logistics. Right now we have soldiers and airmen that are doing contact tracing for the state of Alaska. And we've also helped with food distribution here in South Central, and we've also been prepared to move resources to any parts of the state that would require it. And luckily for us, just, things being the way they are, nobody has needed guard assistance, which is a good thing, which means that the capacities within each of the communities hasn't been exhausted. So really, when a community can't deal with the issues in front of them is usually when we get called in. And so luckily we haven't had to be called in, so that's a good thing.
I see. And could you just give examples of, for people who aren't super familiar with the Alaska National Guard and what they do, can you give some examples of what your team or organization would do in normal times outside of the pandemic?
Sure. In normal times outside of the pandemic, we have our force, our Army and Air Force, Air Guard, are largely part-time. So what that means is about 60% of our force, they have daytime job or weekday jobs, that they would perform and come in one weekend a month, and then they would come in for annual training twice a year. And so largely what our troops and airmen would be focused on is their specific job duties. So we have an infantry battalion, so those folks would be working on infantry tasks, such as marksmanship. We have mechanics for wheeled vehicles and aircraft, and those folks, when they come in, would be working specifically on their designated equipment, whether that's a vehicle, that's a helicopter, that's an airplane. And then we also have part-time pilots as well. A lot of those folks are flying for Alaska Airlines or other regional carriers, and they come in on their weekends and fly to maintain their proficiency. And those would be some examples of some of the things that our part-time force would do, aside from having to deal with COVID at the very present time.
I see. So it sounds like staying ready just in case a large threat manifests itself in the United States.
Yeah, correct. So, you know, the Guard has two focuses. And so the Guard and its organization, we're a state asset. So our commander in chief is the governor. Each governor has a National Guard that he or she is in charge of for state emergencies. You know, that's domestic kinds of things such as hurricanes, floods, or any other sort of natural disaster, or something like COVID, if necessary. And then the other facet that we have to make sure that we're prepared for is our federal mission, which would be to go to places like Iraq, Afghanistan, or wherever we may be called to perform duty. And then at that point, you know, our chain of command shifts from the governor to the president when we become federalized and we serve in that capacity.
Oh, I see. Is Alaska National Guard frequently called into conflicts abroad?
The Guard has been more than it ever has been since its inception with the events of September 11. Since then, most state guards have been activated to go to Iraq and Afghanistan. And we have sent troops to Kosovo, Afghanistan, Iraq. We've got one of our aviation companies that's getting ready to go overseas here in the near future. So yeah, it's one of those things where when there's a lot going on in the world and there's a lot of hot spots, you know, the Department of Defense has to balance the number of times that they call on the federal troops, i.e. Like some of the troops here at Fort Wainwright or Fort Richardson, and in different parts of the world. And as they start to take a look at the number of times that units and troops get sent, they take a look at the larger force pool, and that's Guard and Reserve. And so we've been called at times to augment for the Department of Defense as well.
I see. Well, thanks for telling us about what the Alaska National Guard does. I'd like to hear your personal story, General Don. Can you tell me about how you got your start in the U.S. military?
Sure. I grew up and I graduated from high school in McCoryuk and went out to the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And I enrolled in ROTC about halfway through there, the Reserve Officer Training Corps, and was commissioned in 1994 and started out in the regular Army. And so I went to Europe, Germany, and I served 3 years there. I did two overseas tours in Bosnia during that time from in 95 and 97. And then I went off, once I completed that, to the Captain's Career Course at Fort Benning, and went off and served and commanded a rifle company in the 101st Airborne Division. I was there for 3 years. And then once I completed that assignment, I was sent to the University of Alaska to teach ROTC for 4 years. And once I completed that, I decided I was going to stay in Alaska. And I joined the Guard at that point. And I've had a number of assignments within the Guard to include command of our civil support team, command of our 38th Troop Command. And more recently here, been assigned as the director of the Joint Staff since February of 2020.
I see. I want to back up a little bit, going back to when you were at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Why did you choose the military at that point?
Well, that's a good question. I oftentimes tell youngsters that, I had originally planned on attending West Point, and I had applied to go to West Point when I was graduating from high school, and I actually made it to the West Point board and was nominated by Senator Stevens, but I didn't quite make the cut, so I enrolled in college at UAF, and I really liked the experience and I liked the camaraderie of being around some of my friends, and for a couple of years that's what I did. And about halfway through, I was feeling a little bit lost as far as direction that I was going. I had changed disciplines a couple of times as far as studies. And it looked like a great opportunity for me, so I did it. I joined the Army Reserve and joined ROTC. And it really helped focus me as far as my studies. And that first assignment that I took really excited me about, you know, what it meant to be a soldier. And what it meant to serve, and been hooked ever since.
It sounds like you had interest starting from when you were very young, if you had applied to West Point. Where did that interest come from? Is your family have a history of serving in the military?
Yeah, I found out later that, you know, both of my grandfathers served in the Territorial Guard on my mom and my dad's side. And, you know, a lot of my uncles on my mother's side served in the Territorial Guard. And more immediately, I guess when I was growing up, there was a lot of the young men had been in the Guard. And I guess I was fascinated by military service then, but didn't really take hold until later on. But yeah, there was certainly some influence within the community that I grew up in, and my family that I found out later on. Again, my grandfathers having served in World War II.
I see. And what was that like growing up in a village like McCoryuk to ROTC? Is a very strict, you know, regimen, I imagine. And I imagine that's a very, very stark difference. What was that like?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I oftentimes talk about the transition from being in a small community of 200 to going to university. You know, that's a tremendous social change among everything else. And then, you know, going into the Army, that's another change. And then going to Europe, it's an even bigger change. But to answer your question directly, that, you know, that was very much a cultural difference as far as the regiment, the expectations. But I did find that was good. You know, we did our schedules were fairly organized, and we had requirements for physical fitness, and I really liked that. You know, we did that. That was an important component, and there was an expectation that we maintain our academic standards, which was good, and we also got to start to learn the business of leadership, you know, through trial and error. And that's kind of what the program is all about. It's a leadership development course. And so you get to experiment on what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, you get taught a lot from historical examples and more contemporary examples about what leadership is and, you know, how you go about developing your own personal style. And so I found it to be very interesting and engaging for me, and I, you know, stuck with it. So here I am, 20 years later, still at it.
Yeah, wow. I'm curious. Was it challenging at times, that transition? And do you think that a lot of young people coming from the village would be able to, you know, adapt in the same ways that you did?
Sure. Yeah, that's another good question. I think the other half of this, other half of the question that I didn't completely answer from a social standpoint is that at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, they have this organization called the Rural Student Services, which understandably was formed years ago to help Native students with the transition from being in their small communities to a little bit more urban environment and certainly more challenging environment, because in most cases the number of students in our classes as an undergraduate are, in some cases, more than we had in the whole school. And so in that environment, and the Rural Student Services is a very supportive village, community-like environment that all the students come together for support. But to answer your question, it's possible. I mean, it's certainly, there's certainly some organizations that are stood up to support Native students. Lots of organizations that have come forward and provided assistance. So you know, there's tremendous opportunity there, and it's just one of those things where those organizations are there to support students all the way around. And so I think it's a good thing. And a lot of students have you know, gone through and used the services. So I think, you know, it's possible 100% for sure.
Yeah. And I'm asking you for a lot of introspection pretty early in the morning, but one more. At some point, you made a decision to make the Alaska National Guard and the military your career. So why did you decide? That was another decision after deciding to join the military. Why did you decide to make it your life's work?
Well, yeah, that's a big question. I think at some point I decided that I really enjoyed some of the challenges of, preparation, training, and the personal preparation as far as seeing, and being responsible for the training and the readiness of the units that I've been involved in. And ultimately, I found that, there was a lot of like-minded individuals within the military that I appreciated. And the mission is really good, I thought. Deployed to different places at least three times, the last time being in 2009 and 10 in Afghanistan. And I felt like it was my life's calling just as far as, being a servant to the country. And I think, this country's offered a lot of opportunity to me personally. And I felt like that was my way of giving back. And I guess just in a broader sense, I really appreciated the mission, and I appreciated the opportunities the military has provided me, and the education and the experiences all along the way. And I felt like as far as I could contribute, if I could contribute in any way, up to the point where it's physically not possible for me to participate anymore, or I've made some different life decisions. But at this point, it's been good to me, and I appreciated each of the opportunities along the way, and continue to enjoy the challenge and the satisfaction of being in service.
And would you recommend the path that you took to young people in the Waikiki Delta?
Sure. Yeah, what I would first and foremost say is it's not for everybody, but it's certainly a great opportunity. And if you have questions or if you feel like this might be something that you might want to try, you should at least give it a shot. There are far worse places for a young man or a young woman to spend their time. And as far as the opportunities involved, there are a tremendous amount of opportunities that are resident in the broader Department of Defense or even in the National Guard, all the way around. I think there's just a great opportunity whether you decide to pursue it full-time or you decide to do it part-time and attend college or attend vocational school or work. It's a great way to give back. It's a great way to have a part-time career if you wanted one. But like I said, if you have any interest in it, you should explore it and talk to somebody, talk to a recruiter, talk to a veteran. And I don't think you'd ever regret your decision for serving if you decided to do it.
Yep. Well, I think I could ask you questions for a whole another hour, but unfortunately, we're coming up to time. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning, General Don.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and shout out to everybody in the YK that sent me congratulatory notes, especially my family out in McCormick, my aunt Lydia and Samson, my aunt Dorothy Keokin, and also all my family in Quinhawk, and everybody else out in the YK. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. You've been listening to General Wayne Don, who was promoted yesterday to Brigadier General, making him the highest-ranking Alaska Native currently serving in the Alaska National Guard. Thanks for listening to Coffee at KYUK. I'm your host, Greg Kim. Back to you, Grady.
This is Cassie from Bethel. You're tuned into everyone's radio stations, KYUK, 640 a.m. in Bethel, Alaska.